Jo, hoort het je het nisch? Oh, met zo'n uitdas atlna. Himmutsak yuk. Welcome back, everyone. This is the final lecture of our next to last August weekend. We are now into Unit 17 storytelling. We're going to keep practicing news, probably every day, but we are no longer focusing on news. We are now focusing on storytelling. I aimed at the beginning of August to get through about 2 units per weekend. If everything goes well, we just might get up through Unit 19 next weekend. I would like to do 17 storytelling, 18 what we look like, 19 feelings. But we have a lot planned for next weekend, so we might not get to feelings. We'll see. In addition to talking about those 3 units, we're also going to evaluate at least 2 people in class, one for level one, one for level two. Next weekend is also the Salish Conference, and while that will not cut into our class time, I intend to cancel our usual practices on Thursday and Saturday, so that I and hopefully some of you can attend more of the conference. I mentioned by email that on Saturday, I believe it's Saturday, there are 3 presentations on the ASLA method, which some of us are very interested in. So, highly recommend that all of you who are language teachers or want to become language teachers attend that session if possible. This morning, I shared with you 2 of the PK stories. Let me say a few words about this project. The PK stories is a big, important project that several of us are working on to provide stories that are rich enough to teach us about the language and the culture, but also simple enough for intermediate to advanced learners to begin to read them, listen to them, understand them, and then to tell them themselves. If you've ever tried to tell new channel stories, you know how difficult it is, how difficult and complex a skill it is, how many things you have to know. One of the main design features of the PK stories is to be an entryway or a gradual step, training wheels, if you will, to help learners like us start to tell simplified stories and gradually build up to telling more complex stories, in a style, the way that a fluent speaker would tell them. What I've shared with you are the only 2 stories that are ready for sharing. They are Raven and Skate and Deer and Fire. Deer and Fire, I consider to be one of the first stories that children should hear. It's of general importance and interest. It doesn't seem to be part of a longer narrative that I know of, but something we often hear about old-time stories is that skilled storytellers were capable of stretching out the story for hours or even several nights in a row. So the stories that we're used to are often just episodes in much longer stories, or they would be expanded by a skilled storyteller with additional details in order to fit the venue. But I don't know of any longer story that Deer and Fire is part of. The Raven and Skate, on the other hand, is part of what I call the Raven Cycle, which is a series of stories involving Raven. There's quite a few stories where Raven interacts with one other character. In this one, he interacts mainly with Skate. There's also a story about Raven and Bear. There's a story of Raven and Spring Salmon. And Raven and Snipe. Snipe is a shorebird. And in most of these stories, the general theme is that Raven tries to imitate what the other creature does, but it doesn't work out for him. This one's a little different from that. In Raven and Skate, he's not imitating Skate, he's just trying to kill Skate so that he can eat him. But that doesn't work out for him either. Occasionally, it does work out for Raven. For example, there's a story where Raven succeeds in killing Deer and he's able to eat him, but then he dies because he eats the whole body, including the stuff that you're not supposed to eat, because he's a greedy pig. Let's talk about story genres. I mentioned that there are two main genres of stories in New Chanelth culture, and they are completely distinct, zero overlap. They are Uyakhmis and Himwitsakyak. Uyakhmis is any old story. It could be a true history from long ago. It could be a true news story from today or yesterday. Those are all Uyakhmis. Himwitsakyak are these old-time stories that usually have animal characters. It's not clear. It's usually not clear whether they are in animal shape or human shape, or whether they go back and forth between them. Sometimes that is described because it's important to the story, but usually it is not. So some people imagine them as people with slightly animal characteristics. Some people imagine them as anthropomorphic animals. So that's one of the features of Himwitsakyak. They are set in this long ago time where animals were able to take human shape. They often have a moral, and they're also in the public domain. No one owns these stories. They're used in common and told by everyone. However, particular people and their families will have their own versions of these stories. We talked a little bit about the different versions that we've used in order to develop the PK versions of these two stories. For Raven and Skate, there's a version in Sapir Thomas. We also have versions from John Hudson Webster. I recorded a DT.dot version from the late Ernie Chester. The macaws tell this story as well. As for Deer and Fire, Carrie Little tells a version of this story, and George Clutesy tells a version of this story in his book Son of Raven, Son of Deer. George Clutesy's version only survives in English, as far as I know. With Carrie Little, we have both languages. I also have a version of Deer and Fire from Hilda Hansen, who is a Cayucut elder. So we use all of these versions when creating the PK version. We read Raven and Skate together, and we talked about some of the important words that one needs to know in order to understand these stories. In the Raven and Skate story, there are lots of words having to do with spearing. They're all based on the root tsach, hard C-A-X, tsach. Tsachshit is the verb to spear. You also hear it in the repetitive form. Tsach tsacha means repeatedly spearing something. Tsachyuk is the noun, a spear. Tsachstuth is spearing each other, and that's the word we use for the spearing contest. Raven challenges Skate to a spearing contest. Raven ends up getting hit by a spear, and for that the word is tsawakt or tsawakstut. And the spear actually goes all the way through his body. The word for that is tsachswi. Tsachswi. Some other important words in Raven and Skate are nawayis and thakshi'i. Nawayis was explained a bit by Josh. Nawayis means hanging out on the beach, enjoying the universe, not doing anything particularly important. Tom Curley, who's a Tlokwe elder, likes to talk about what he calls the wisdom bench, nawayisum. Nawayisum is his word for wherever the old people would sit in the sunlight on the beach while they just talked about whatever they talked about. In Chanelth, it's called Nawayasum. His English translation of that is wisdom bench. Often when Raven ends up suffering for his greed, someone tells him Thakshi'i. At least that's the word in Barkly and Central dialects. Thakshi'i, you'll notice, is related to the word Thakshi'i. Thakshi'i means please. It has long, short vowels, but thakshi'i is short short, and that means serves you right. The connection there is that the root thuk means pathetic, describes something pathetic, something that someone else should take pity on. When we say please in Uchanal, we're asking someone to take pity on us. But when the audience, when the spectators tell Raven Thakshi'i, they're saying you're pitiful and you deserve it. There are also lots of interesting non-everyday words in Deer and Fire. We talked about the word Hishtsukwati. This is not heard every day. Hishtsukwati is a word for abalone shell. Abalone shell is used a lot in decoration. Part of what's important in the story of Deer and Fire is that he dresses and dances in such a way as to distract the wolves from what he's doing. He's stealing some of their fire, but they're so distracted by his leaping and his flashy costume that they don't notice what he's doing until he's already gotten away. I might add that in some versions, it ends badly for Deer. He succeeds in getting the fire, but he gets killed in the end. But we've given our version a happy ending. A couple more words I'll mention from Deer and Fire. One is Hush In. Hush In is a dancing costume. The ending on Hush In is related to Ukwich. You might know the word Ukwich, to wear clothes. The ending for wearing clothes is itch, glottal stop, I, C wedge, itch, and it has a corresponding noun ending in. So wearing something often ends in itch, and then the thing that you wear ends in in. So for example, hush in is a dance costume. Hush itch means wearing a dance costume. Mitch in is a rain, is rain gear. It can be a rain cape or a rain hat. Mitch in. And wearing rain gear is mit itch. Schutz in is woman's clothing. That is a dress, a woman or girl style of dress. That's called Schutz in. Those words all have the same ending. Hush in, dancing costume. Schutz in, woman's dress. Mit in, rain gear or rain hat. The word tuchtspa is important in Deer and Fire. In fact, jumping comes in both stories. In Deer and Fire, Deer distracts the wolves by dancing, and as we know, deer are very good at jumping. So he jumps all over the place. He jumps over the fire, and that's how he's able to steal some of it. When he jumps from one side of the fire to the other, the word is tuchtspa. Tuchtspa. That means to jump to the other side of something. In the Raven and Skate story, both Raven and Skate have tricks for dodging each other's spears. Skate's trick is that he turns 90 degrees so that he makes himself super skinny. Raven's trick is that he jumps up in the air to avoid the spear. When Raven is jumping up in the air, the word is tuchshit, to jump, or tuchwapi. Tuchwapi means he's jumped up and he's in the air. Tuchwapi is continuous aspect. So it describes that moment when he's in the air. He's already jumped and he hasn't come back to the ground yet. And both those words have the same root, which is tuch. I mentioned the two main genres, which I'm calling Uyakhmis and Himwitsakyak. There is a third genre that we might mention, which is Eichaenyak. Eichaenyak. I'm much less familiar with this because it is an old-fashioned Barclay sound word that is not used very much at all anymore, and I've never heard it north of Barclay Sound. But it has the same root as Ichim. Ichim means an old person or an elder. Eichaen means talking about one's elders, talking about one's ancestors. So Eichaenyak is a history of one's ancestors. This is a particular genre of story that will be owned by a particular person or family. It talks about one of their illustrious ancestors who did something special. For example, often that person had a supernatural experience and got some ability or performed some deed or got a song from that experience, which forms the core of the each Ayin Yak. The word occurs from time to time in the Sapir Thomas texts when public speakers are praising each other, or when a public speaker is praising a chief. One of the things he might say is, "They will tell ancestor stories about you." It's a high compliment, saying you're a well-known person who's done big things. So we could this is considered by my colleague Henry Kamler to be a third genre. So there's Uyakhmis, true stories; Himwitsakyak, folk tales; and Eichayinyak, ancestor histories. Josh pointed out that we might also use the word Daakokhli to refer to true history. Uyakhmis is a noun meaning information or story or news. Daakokhli is a verb meaning telling the truth. And I sometimes hear Julia using the words together. Like she might say, Daakokhli Uyakhmis, by which she means to tell a true story, to tell a true history. And she might say this in order to specify that she is not telling a folktale. I gave you an example earlier that I'll repeat now about one of several occasions where I mistakenly called something Himwitsakyuk when it turned out not to be. The latest example of that was when we were talking about the little people. There are these little supernatural people that are known as Matsmakin. They're small people, invisible to adults, but children can see them. And if they see someone being bad, they throw a spear at him, and you know that you've been speared by these invisible spearmen because your body swells up, you get a boil or something. I called this Himwitsakyuk because I thought supernatural creatures, it's a folktale, and I was immediately corrected. I was told, nope, that's not Himwitsakyuk, because there are people. I knew someone who saw one of the little people. That makes it true history as opposed to folktale. We have 18 minutes left. I want to talk about three common and important constructions that you need to be able to understand in order to appreciate even simple stories like this. And those constructions are, first, the passive construction. Second, possessor raising. And third, the atqu construction. I'll explain each one of these. I'll give an example or two, and hopefully we'll have a few minutes left at the end for debriefing, discussion, and questions. I'm going to use Raven and Skate for examples, and I'm going to use the central version, but what I say will apply to all the dialects. I'm looking at the first few paragraphs of Raven and Skate, and I see that the first instance of a passive ending happens in paragraph one. The next time is in paragraph four. The passive ending in Nuchanalf is ut, that is hardening at. It is a hardening ending. Concerning its order, it is ordered very close to the ubiquitous ending ut, the causative up, and the possessive uk or uk. In fact, if you look at the word structure handout, you'll find that these endings all occur very close to each other. And if you get all four, they occur in the order up, ut, ut, uk. And I found that during my own learning, I found that a very helpful mnemonic to say up, ut, ut, uk to myself when I was trying to use two or more of these endings together and I needed to remember what order they come in with respect to each other. I would say up, ut, ut, uk to myself, up, ut, ut, uk, up, ut, ut, uk. And that would help me remember. If you forget that, you should look at the word structure handout to remind yourself. Let's take a look at Raven and Skate, paragraph one, and talk about the use of the passive there. In the central version, paragraph one says, "Hat wicket wa ish ko ishin mit." Son of Raven was a glutton. "Uk mis hat ha uk." He enjoyed eating. "Wik an hay u u kwetchi ha um nah." but not looking after going for food himself. The passive is in the word ukmeshat. Ukmeshat ha'uk. He enjoyed eating. Now, this is not a canonical use of the passive. This is a special use of the passive that I will not explain right now, but we might get to if we get to the feelings unit. So one thing you need to know about the passive ending ut is that it has several uses. Same ending, different functions. This is one of the extra functions that we're not going to go into right now. But if you look at paragraph 4, you will see an example of the canonical use of the passive. Raven has sent his wife, Pashhima, to invite Skate to a spearing contest. And at first, Skate says no. Chani atlet wik wa at pakwin mit. At first, Skate said no. Chani atlet wik wa at pakwin mit. There are two passive endings in this sentence. Chani atlet. See that ut? And wik wa at ends in the passive. These two passive endings tell us that they flip the direction of the action here. And the reason for this is that Raven is the center of the story. Our attention is focused on him. So in the first sentence of paragraph 4 describes what Skate is doing, but it tells it from Raven's point of view. So literally it's saying, at first Raven was told no by Skate. At first Raven was told no by Skate. Chani atlet wik wa at pakwin mit. The next sentence tells us that Skate eventually gives in. Aha atlet chu wa at. Eventually he said okay. This is still passive. So literally it's saying eventually he was told okay. The reason for the passive here is to keep our attention on Raven. We've seen that another common use of the passive is to keep the attention on the people in a conversation. So if you and I are having a conversation and I'm the one speaking, I refer to myself as I refer to you as you, everyone else is a he, she, it, or they. And Nuchanalth does not like to say that he, she, it, or they does something to me or you. Instead, we say you or I is done to by him, her, it, or them. So these are both these examples from Raven and Skate, and the example I just gave of how we keep the focus on the people in a conversation is an example of how Nuchanalth uses the passive in order to focus attention on whoever's considered most important. Next, we'll talk about possessor raising. We have an example of possessor raising in paragraph 6 of Raven and Skate. Tsakhshi mit. Raven threw his spear. Quatshit mahsa, wanting to hit. Tsakhyak, but his spear missed. Wiktsachi and went the wrong way. You'll see that the words Tsakhyak, his missed, and Wiktsachi his went the wrong way, have the possessive ending uk on them. These are examples of possessor raising. Possessor raising is another kind of focusing trick in Nuchanalth. When the spear misses, it's the spear itself that's missing. But Nuchanalth wants to make the sentence about the one who possesses the spear rather than about the spear itself, because we're not very interested in the spear. The spear is not the main character of the story. The main character of the story is Raven. The way that the language shifts focus onto the possessor is with possessor raising. I gave you a brief description yesterday of how possessor raising works. You can think of it like this. There is a simple sentence. Often it's a sentence that is never said, but it is a possible sentence that describes what a possession does. Nuchanalth takes that sentence, adds the possessor ending to it, and then the agreement of the sentence shifts to whoever possesses that thing. That is what we call possessor raising. It means that we're taking the attention off of the possession and raising it up to the possessor who is more important. So the simple sentence here is Se'a mit wa ish tzachyuk. The spear missed. Se'a mit wa ish tzachyuk. That is a conceivable sentence in Nuchanoth, but it's one that would almost never be said, because spears are never main characters of stories. Instead, we want the sentence to be about whoever owns that spear. So we add the possessive ending uk, and the sentence becomes se'a akit wa ish tzachyuk. His spear missed. Se'a akit wa ish tzachyuk. Let me give you another example. This morning, Ciela told us that her boyfriend was the one who cooked, and first she said it in a plain, simple way. She said, "Sikhilita chakupukkas." My boyfriend cooked. Sikhilita chakupukkas. And this is an acceptable sentence of Nuchanal. But the better way to say it would be to possessor raise. The better way would be for Ciela to make the sentence about herself by possessor raising. So the simple sentence is Sikhilita, he cooked. The possessor raised sentence would be Sikhilukwita chakup. Sikhilukwita chakup. My man cooked. Notice that Sikhilukwita has the possessive ending uk on it, and the agreement has shifted to I, because Ciela is now the most important person in the sentence. So we've raised the possessor to the focus position, to the most important, the central position in the sentence. These are a couple of examples of possessor raising. It takes a long time to really start to get possessor raising, but at some point your brain figures it out, because it's not that complicated a thing. It's just not something that English does. Once your brain starts to get it, you'll start to think of ways of possessor raising different sentences. Some of them will be right, some of them will be wrong. Eventually, you will zero in on the right generalization, and you too will be a possessor raiser. We had a question: what would that sentence be in a Hadasit? The answer is "Sikhilukwints chakup," my man cooked. Sikhilukwints chakup. And Lindsay noticed that the possessive comes before the past. If it was in a sentence with the future, it would come after the future. So, and to remind yourself of this, you can look at the word structure handout to see what order things come in. Next, we're going to talk about the atqu construction, a very frequent construction. There's an example in paragraph 8 of Raven and Skate. It's in the third sentence. So Raven is trying to dodge Skate's spear by jumping, but Skate tricks him by waiting until Raven has committed himself to his jump, and then Skate throws his spear. So the third sentence is Na wahe at paquin mit. Skate waited. Tsach shi at tuhwapat ko ishint mit. Then he threw his spear while Raven was in the air jumping. So the key word here is tuhwapatko. Tuhwapatko. Let's build that word. The root is tuh. Tuh is the root for jump. Tuhwapi means jumping up, and it's continuous aspect. So it's a word that we would rarely use, because jumping happens so fast, we rarely want to talk about the moment in the middle of the jump. But that's what tuhwapi talks about. It's talking about jumping up without beginning or end. We might use it to describe a photograph that shows a deer in mid-jump. We could say tuhwapi-ish. It's jumping up. In this case, we're able to use the word because that moment is crucial, right? Skate times his throw so that he hits Raven while he's in the air. We were building the word. Tuh is the root. Tuhwapi, jumping up. Tuhwapatl, that's with the ending atl. Tuhwapatlqu means while he was jumping up, while he was in the air. So something special has happened here. You know the ending atl. We've talked a lot about it. It is used all over the place. It's not easy to understand or explain, but very important to be able to understand and use. Qu is the possible mood, which we haven't used very much yet, but is a very frequent mood in Nuchanoth. Utku, when ut and ku come together, they have a special meaning. That meaning is when that happens. So tuhupatku means when he was jumping, when he was in the air. And all of you who have spent any amount of time with the language have heard countless examples of the utku construction. Very common. I should add that all of these constructions, passive, possessor raising, and utku, can be used in all persons. So when I was jumping is tuhupatkus. When you were jumping, tuhupatkuk. When we were jumping, tuhupatkun. When you all were jumping, tuhupatkusu, and so on. So we have a question about aspect. The word, first question is, what aspect is the word tuhupatku? The answer is, it's in the continuous aspect, while he was jumping, without beginning or end, tuhupatku. The complete aspect form of tuhupi is tuhuaput. We could use that word as well. Tuhuapuatku would be the word then. We would build it like this. Tuh, tuhupi, tuhuaput, tuhuapuat, tuhuapuatku. And that would mean at the moment he started jumping. So tuhupatku means while he was in the air. Tuhuapuatku would mean when he started jumping. So the aspect affects the meaning there, but the utku construction is completely independent of aspect. It's used with any aspect. That's the end of my first lecture on storytelling. I've talked about three important genres of stories: true history, folk tales, and ancestor histories. I talked a little bit about these two PK stories. These are boiled down versions of traditional Himwitsakyak. And I also talked about three important constructions that you need to understand. Those were the passive, possessor raising, and utku.